this is William Fink, and this is Christigenia Internet Radio. Today is Friday, December 29th, 2023. Praise Yahweh, the God of Israel, and thank you for listening. I don't believe it's December 29th. On December 31st, Sunday morning in the United States, I'll be starting at 9 a.m. here in Central Time, I believe. There will be a Euro Forum at Christigenia. The announcement will be on the front page. It'll be moved to the top by then. There's a link to the video server on the announcement where the forum will be held. You don't have to have your video camera on. I prefer that people didn't have their cameras on, but it's timed that way, and I've been trying to do it once a quarter. I might be a little late, but it's timed that way for people that don't normally get to attend the Friday night open forums, which we have once a quarter. And it's timed so that mostly our friends in Europe and some friends in Australia can participate, and other people who don't normally get to participate on a Friday evening, if they so choose. This evening, we are going to present part 41 of our commentary on Genesis, and this is titled Mutual Exploitation, speaking of the relationship between Laban and Jacob. There is a lot of gobbledygook in this program concerning genetics. I really tried to keep it to a minimum, but the fact is that the phenomenon of the striped, speckled, spotted sheep and goats, which Jacob had raised as his own wages in Genesis chapter 30, that phenomenon can be explained by something called epigenetics. And I will do my best to explain that from established scientific, mainstream scientific sources throughout this program, which I'm sure that they are actually not all wrong. In my own life experience tells me that this makes perfect sense, believe it or not. As we have seen in Genesis chapter 29, and the marriage agreement between Jacob and Laban for his daughter Rachel. Laban had exploited Jacob by burdening him with 7 years of labor in exchange for her hand, which was a condition to which Jacob had rather eagerly agreed. That alone seems to have been excessive, since 90 years earlier, Laban's father Bethuel had required nothing from the servant of Abraham in exchange for giving him Rebekah as a wife for Isaac. There in Genesis chapter 24, where the servant had asked for Rebekah and had given Bethuel and Laban an account of his experiences and the visions which he had, we read in part, "Then Laban and Bethuel," this very same Laban who dealt with Jacob as a much older man, "answered and said, the thing proceeds from Yahweh. We cannot speak unto thee bad or good. Behold, Rebekah is before thee. Take her and go, and let her be thy master's son's wife, as Yahweh had spoken." Then, as we read in the subsequent verses, the servant had given gifts to Rebekah's mother and brother, her brother Laban, the same Laban who had burdened Jacob here, but he had evidently given nothing to Bethuel, Rebekah's father, and apparently Bethuel required nothing of him. So even after laying a comparatively excessive burden on Jacob, Laban went even further and had exploited him by burdening him far beyond the 7 years to which he had agreed. He deceived Jacob by having him marry Leah rather than Rachel. And by that action, he then compelled him further to work 7 additional years for Rachel, whom Jacob had evidently already professed to have loved. This we read in Genesis chapter 29 and verse 20. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. So Jacob, who could not deny his love, actually had worked 14 years for Laban's daughter Rachel and none for Leah, whom he obtained by Laban's choice and not by his own. In contrast, Isaac did not have to lift a finger to marry Rebekah, who only cost Abraham the journey of some servants and a few choice gifts. While we may never know whether or not that was his reason, Isaac had apparently sent Jacob to Haran empty-handed, as he is not recorded as having had any gifts for a prospective bride and her family. As a further digression, after our last presentation, one of our friends suggested that maybe Jacob had been intoxicated at the feast, for which reason he was more easily deceived into sleeping with Leah rather than Rachel. While the customary wine may have been a factor, it is my opinion that Jacob could not have been too intoxicated, or really intoxicated at all, since there should be no doubt that he remembered that he did indeed marry Leah when he awoke the next morning. Furthermore, he did not regret having lain with Leah, and neither did he blame any wine, but he only rued Laban's deception. So apparently for 14 years, Laban had Jacob's labor only for the cost of his board. And then some additional years, as Joseph is already now born at some time close to when the 20 years which Jacob spent in Haran had already passed. Now, here we shall learn that Laban continued to exploit him even after those first 14 years were passed, as Jacob had remained in Haran for a total of 20 years, which we shall read in Genesis chapter 31. It's in both verses 38 and 41. But first we shall take a digression to discuss our chronology. From the information which Genesis provides, we can only estimate that Jacob was 130 years old when Joseph was 40 years old, as we see that about the time that Joseph was 30, as it is described in Genesis chapter 41, 7 years of plenty had passed, and then 2 years of famine when Joseph had sent his brothers back to Canaan to fetch his brother Benjamin and his father Jacob so that they would survive a remaining 5 years of the famine, as it is described in Genesis chapter 45. Therefore, when Jacob stands before Pharaoh in Egypt, as it is described in Genesis chapter 47, he is 130 years old, and we may imagine that Joseph was nearly, if not already, 40 years old. So on this account, we can imagine that when Jacob stood before Pharaoh, it had been about 40 years since Jacob had left Haran, as Joseph was the last child born to him there. And here, where we shall commence with Genesis chapter 30, in verse 25, it is apparent that Jacob wanted to leave Haran almost as soon as Joseph was born. But there will be a delay, and we do not know the length of the delay. It could be a year, or it could be two. So if Joseph was 3 years old when Jacob left Haran after having been there for 20 years, Jacob could not have gotten to Haran until he was 73 years old rather than 70. But if Joseph was a year old, since we approximated his age on the high side when he was 40, where he may have only been 39, then Jacob may have been only 70, or perhaps 71 when he arrived in Haran. Because we cannot know precisely how much longer Jacob had stayed at this point after Joseph was born. Our chronology could easily be a year or two off in regard to the precise time when Jacob was in Haran. However, that would not change the chronology of the time when Jacob went to Egypt in relation to when Joseph was born or the age of Jacob when he arrived there, when Jacob himself was born. Because in regard to those events, we do have an explicit number of years. However, in any event, Jacob could not have stayed in Haran for too long after Joseph was born. Since even after 14 years, when he had finally married Rachel, Leah had conceived and came to full term with three more children, which had very likely taken at least 3 years before Rachel had even conceived Joseph. That reflects a period of at least 3 years during which Rachel was barren, which is sufficiently consistent with the genitive narrative. And it leaves no more than 2 years for Jacob to finally leave Haran after Joseph was born. Or perhaps three, if all four children were born in the fastest possible succession. I don't know how fast a woman can have one child after another, except from my personal life experience. I've seen that my little brother was born 11 and a half months after my sister, and my wife and her older brother have about 11 months or so between them. I imagine that could be the fastest. So four children might be able to be born in 44 months, perhaps. But that's pretty tight. Okay, I imagine that would also destroy a woman, not even giving her time to heal from child after child after child. So this circumstance is just another example of why no biblical chronology can be entirely accurate in every respect. Instead, we would only claim that our chronology is a reasonable approximation based on what facts we can glean from Scripture. With this in mind, we should also note that the gestation period for sheep, and this is going to, the reasons I'm saying this are going to become apparent as we proceed through the chapter. The gestation period for sheep is about 5 months, while that of goats is almost precisely the same. I think there are only about 3 days difference between them on average, according to mainstream agricultural sources. 147 days for sheep and 150 days perhaps for goats or something like that. That's 5 months. So two generations of such animals may be born within a year. I know that's not normal, and I will address that later. But this is a factor here in this account, as the time to produce two generations of sheep and goats, or even three, may still fit into a period of 20 years, along with the births of the 12 children of Jacob. That's 11 boys and a girl before the birth of Benjamin, after he left Haran. So that could still fit into that period of the births of the 12 children of Jacob, which he had before he left Haran. I just killed the second mosquito on my monitor in about 10 minutes. They must be trying to come into my house to get out of the cold here. It's pretty cold in Florida this evening, 43 degrees before I started this program. So this also implies that Jacob had been working for Laban for even longer than he was bound by his agreement to work for Rachel. And that had to be the case since Rachel was barren for at least several years before she had Joseph from the time that they were first married. Therefore, if the 20 years which Jacob had spent in Haran were from ages 70 to 90, or 72 to 92, or somewhere in between, it really does not matter, and our estimation is close enough to being reasonable, regardless of what we may settle upon. So with this, we shall commence with Genesis chapter 30, As we had left off with the birth of Joseph, which is described in verses 22 to 24, and the prayer of Rachel that she would have yet another son, or that she would yet have another son, as I wrote it. Sometimes I read the words backwards from how I wrote them in my own presentations. So, verse 25, Genesis chapter 30. And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, Send me away, that I may go unto mine own place and to my country. We may imagine that this had happened only days or even weeks after the birth of Joseph. Leah had left off bearing children with Judah, and it is rather safe to assume that some of those sons were born before Jacob had married Rachel. Otherwise, in the manner in which their births are described, they could not have all been born in only 5 or even 6 years before Rachel had conceived Joseph. As we have also seen earlier in this chapter, Reuben was already old enough to go out into the field and to recognize and bring home the mandrakes which he had found to give them to his mother Leah. Even then, before Rachel conceived Joseph, the two handmaids had also each had 2 sons, and Leah would have 3 more children, 2 sons and a daughter, before Joseph was conceived. Jacob's request continues. Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served thee, and let me go, for thou knowest my service which I have done thee. As we had explained, it must be very much near to 20 years, and by the ages of Jacob and Joseph, when they are in Egypt much later in their lives, at this point, it could not be much less than 20 years, since Jacob must have been 89 or 90 years old when Joseph was born. And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that Yahweh has blessed me for thy sake. And he said, Appoint me thy age, thy wages, and I will give it. And of course, I must make a short note that wherever I say the term Yahweh, or as the King James Version has it, the Lord, that Moses had used that name anachronistically in the Genesis account, because it wasn't revealed to the children of Israel until at least Exodus chapter 3, I think it was. So the patriarchs until that time had only known him by God Almighty, but Moses is writing this for the sake of his listeners, of his readers, and not for the sake of the patriarchs who had lived this, because they were already long past by the time Moses had written. If Jacob remains, Laban is allowing him to fix his own value. But as we shall see later in this account, Laban had exploited him on at least several other occasions by changing his wages. Even that had begun when he changed Leah for Rachel, or Rachel for Leah, depending on how you want to look at that. Here it is also manifest that Laban had wanted Jacob to stay for his own personal gain and not for Jacob's benefit. Then, since Laban had sons of his own, it is also apparent that Jacob would have nothing of his estate if he had died. So Jacob replies, and he said to him, Thou knowest how I have served thee, and how thy cattle was with me. For it was little which thou hast before I came, and it is now increased into a multitude. And Yahweh has blessed thee since my coming, and now when I shall provide for my own house also. And now when shall I provide for my own house also? Regardless of any inheritance which Jacob may have had with Isaac, after working for Laban for nearly 20 years, he must be able to provide for himself and his family, So he illustrates this predicament to justify what he is about to demand if he remains. Earlier in this account, where we saw in Genesis chapter 29 that Rachel was the keeper of her father's sheep, we wondered whether she was a keeper of a sheep or the keeper of a sheep. Here Jacob seems to be answering that question. He seems to be informing us that all the sheep of Laban were kept by Rachel, as he asserts that the flock was small. So Laban replies, and he said, "What shall I give thee?" And Jacob said, "Thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep thy flock." Now Jacob makes his demand for his wage. But the end result will also be that Jacob is compelled to leave Haran, as we shall see. "I will pass through thy flock, all thy flock, today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire." The word for flock here is tisan, which Strong defines as being from an unused root meaning to migrate, a collected name for a flock of sheep or goats. And with this, Jesenius generally agrees and gives examples of the use of the word in this specific manner, defining it to mean flocks, small cattle, that is, sheep and goats. The word for cattle, which appears twice here, is seh, S-H, which Strong's defines as a member of the flock, that is, a sheep or a goat. And once again, Jesenius agrees, where he has commonly a sheep or a goat, a noun of unity, to which answers the collective tisan, a flock of sheep or goats. Therefore, the cattle here are sheep and goats, and not larger bovines, which have much longer gestation periods. And we'll see later why that's important, why I am mentioning that. There are at least four adjectives here, translated as spotted, speckled, ring-straked, and grizzled, of which the original nuances in the differences of meanings among them may have been lost to some degree. So their translations in the King James and other versions, as well as those which are found in the lexicons, are mostly only estimations. We shall examine the definitions of the terms in chapter 31. At the end of our presentation, or towards the end of our presentation this evening. For now, where Jacob continues, he explains the motive for the method by which he shall receive these wages. "So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, when it shall come for my hire before thy face. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats, and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me." And here the New American Standard Bible offers a clearer sense of the intended meaning, where it has the verse to read, "So my honesty will answer for me later, when you come concerning my wages. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen." In other words, Jacob would only take the speckled or spotted or otherwise blemished of the cattle for himself, which would have been expected to have been only a minority of the cattle. But unknown to Laban is something which Jacob did not admit here, and which Laban, for all his treachery, did not deserve to know. In chapter 31, there is an account where Jacob describes to Rachel and Leah how he had gained this great wealth from this circumstance, which is described to Laban, and for what reasons? So he explained to them that he had a dream. And we read in part from verse 10, and we are going to get this far in this conversation tonight, but I have to preface what follows with this. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived, that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ringstraked, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spoke to me into a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here I am. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes and see. All the rams which leap upon the cattle are ringstraked, speckled, and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. While all of the details of how this happened are not related in that explanation, it must have been revealed to Jacob how it should be made to happen. Because here in the subsequent verses, Jacob would do certain things to make it happen, which he could not have otherwise known. This is not an account of some miraculous event or some act of magic, but rather it seems to be an example of an epigenetic phenomenon, where certain environmental factors can indeed affect genetic expression. While we should not agree with everything that modern science claims concerning DNA, especially because the fools still uphold a belief in macroevolution, even though they have not one instance of its occurrence, epigenetics only describes genetic expression and not the changing of the DNA itself. All living organisms apparently carry genes, which a certain individual may not express, such as an individual with blue, brown, and green-eyed ancestors, and children who himself may have blue eyes. So he carries brown and green-eyed genes, but he himself does not express those genes. They may be expressed in some of his ancestors from whom he had inherited them, and they may be expressed in some of his children or grandchildren to whom he had passed them on. We have several friends, in fact, my own stepson, who had blue eyes as children, and green or hazel eyes as adults. So they did express certain genes later on in their life. Therefore, rather unwittingly, Laban had accepted the proposition. And Laban said, Behold, I would it might be according to thy word. So Laban answered with the prayer, I wish it to be according to your word. Even if we may suspect that sense, at least on the surface, Jacob's offer sounds like it may be more advantageous for Laban that his prayer is disingenuous. Now Laban reacts. And he removed that day the he-goats that were ring-straked and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and everyone that had some white in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and gave them into the hand of his sons. The he here is Laban. And he evidently removed the spotted and speckled animals from his flock, since they may have been intended for Jacob's first wages, but perhaps he had them set aside not only for that purpose, but also because he may have believed that their offspring would also more likely be speckled and spotted when they mated with the others. The fact that Jacob had told Laban to separate out all of the speckled and spotted animals before he went to tend the rest of Laban's flocks is remarkable, because when the remaining animals bore speckled and spotted offspring in abundance, not being speckled and spotted themselves, then the truth of Jacob's words words here where he said, "So shall my righteousness answer for me," could not be questioned. So now Laban made certain that the speckled and spotted animals would not be near to have contact with his main flocks in verse 36. And he set 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. And of course, the King James Version has betwixt, but it means between. The Septuagint has between them and Jacob, referring to the animals. And that is more accurate in this context. While Laban had evidently thought that speckled and spotted animals would breed more of the same, the truth is that all sheep, goats, and other animals, such as mice and even humans, have latent genes which may be activated in various ways, which may change the coloration of the animal's coat or hair, or of human hair. The following is from the abstract of a study published at the American National Library of Science. Agouti signaling protein, ASIP, is one of the key players in the modulation of hair pigmentation in mammals. Binding to the melanocortin 1 receptor, agouti signaling protein induces the synthesis of phenylmelanin associated with reddish brown, red, tan, and yellow coats. We have sequenced 2.8 kb. I imagine that's kilobits. 2.8 or 2800 bits of the goat ASIP gene, agouti signaling protein gene, in 48 individuals and identified 2 mycine and 2 intronic polymorphisms. There are technical terms in the text that I will skip over to spare listeners unnecessary details. In silico analysis, revealed that one of these missense genes, the substitution of it may cause a structural change by disrupting a highly conserved disulfide bond. We studied its segregation in 12 Spanish and Italian goat breeds with different pigmentation patterns and found striking differences in the frequency of the putative loss of function, referring to a specific allele, but we did not observe a clear association with coat color. This suggests that the frequency of this putative loss of function allele has evolved under the influence of demographic rather than selection factors in goats from these 2 geographical areas. Now, this may seem unrelated to what we are trying to explain here. However, selection refers to traits from genes directly inherited from parents, regardless of genetic expression. But when genetic scientists speak of demographic factors, they are referring to a group of factors which include environmental fluctuations. Nutrition is also such a factor. And yet another article published at the National Library of Medicine states that, in particular, specific genetic variants can influence the response to dietary components and nutrient requirements. And conversely, the diet itself is able to modulate gene expression. The nutritional and environmental factors cannot change DNA, but they can affect which of the genes that are already in an individual's DNA are expressed, as all animals have genetic material representing traits which are not expressed, but which may be expressed throughout one's life or at some time in one's life or passed on and expressed in future offspring. In the same study, we read, thus, maternal nutrition can be considered as a major influence on resetting the epigenome in the early embryo because it affects offspring phenotype through alterations of oocyte maturation. Now, those oocytes are the source of the eggs in a female mammal's womb. Oocyte provisioning and oocyte stores of mitochondria and metabolites. In particular, the cytoplasmic constituents respond to maternal nutrition in a specific way. Dietary fat increases lipid droplet size and composition. Micronutrients influence DNA methylation. Methylation is an important word here this evening. And alterations in dietary lipid and sugars affect mitochondrial activity. And this last part is most relevant to our interpretation of Jacob's actions here. But the reasons why we are discussing these things will only become apparent as we proceed. First, we should briefly familiarize ourselves with DNA methylation from an article at Wikipedia. DNA methylation is a biological process by which methyl groups are added to the DNA molecule. Methylation can change the activity of a DNA segment without changing the sequence. When located in a gene promoter, DNA methylation typically acts to repress gene transcription. In mammals, DNA methylation is essential for normal development and is associated with a number of key processes, including genomic imprinting, X chromosome inactivation, repression of transposable elements, aging, and carcinogenesis, or the creation of cancer cells. Verse 37, Genesis chapter 30. And Jacob took him rods of green poplar, and of the hazel and chestnut tree, and pilled white streaks in them. He made white stripes in them by taking the bark off, and made the white appear which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had pilled before the flocks in the gutters in the watering troughs, when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. The word which is translated as rods here, makel, or in the feminine, makela, would have been better translated as sticks, or even better, as shoots in this context. Strong's original concordance defines the word as being from an unused root apparently meaning to germinate, a shoot, that is, a stick. Regardless of whether it still had leaves or was used for some other purpose. Here, Jacob, who must have done this with the inspiration of Yahweh in the vision which he later described, stripped portions of the bark of either sapling trees or tree branches, which would allow aromatic emissions, aromas, and purposely put them into the water, which the cattle would drink ahead of the flocks. Additionally, both sheep and goats, I should say he put them into the water ahead of the flocks, from which the cattle would then drink. That would be better. Sometimes I don't get to properly edit my presentations before I present them. Additionally, both sheep and goats are evidently notorious for eating the bark of trees. From pine trees to fruit trees and other hardwood trees, and also even the wood itself, a study described in a blog post at Tuskegee University suggests that eating pine bark is even beneficial to goats and sheep to reduce parasites where pharmaceuticals have been effective, I'm sorry, ineffective. In the United States, many agricultural hobbyists have published articles and videos complaining about their trees having been destroyed by their sheep and their goats. And among many other sources, the Australian government agency has published an article for small landholders titled "Preventing Tree Damage by Livestock." There, we read in part, "Grazing animals can cause extensive damage to trees, both young and old. Seedlings are removed, and, in other words, they're eaten, and mature trees chewed, bunted, and rubbed against by goats, sheep, and cattle." We have already discussed studies that discuss DNA methylation as a device by which genetic expression is manipulated, and an explanation that DNA methylation is a biological process by which methyl groups are added to the DNA molecule. In yet another study published at the National Library of Medicine, we read that lignin is one of the main components of plant cell wall, and it is a natural phenolic polymer with high molecular weight, complex composition, and structure. Lignin is one of the main components of plant cell wall, and it is a natural phenolithic polymer with, I have the same sentence twice, and I don't think I did that. I may have, or it might be the source website, but all of my sources are listed here with clickable links. Then, in an academic handbook on cell wall chemistry, we read that softwood lignin has a methoxyl content of 15 to 16%, while hardwood lignin has a methoxyl content of 21%. According to the National Library of Medicine, methoxyl is a radical form of methyl, and that and other forms are found abundantly in trees. One more study, published at Oxford Academic, it said, website that publishes scientific journals and articles, puts this information together in a manner that should elucidate its relevance to Jacob's experience here in Genesis, where we read in an article titled "The Agouti Mouse Model, an Epigenetic Biosensor for Nutritional and Environmental Alterations on the Fetal Epigenome." Remember, Jacob's putting these trees that have these high concentrations of methyl in the form of methoxyl in the water where the sheep and the goats, the ewes and the she-goats especially, are going to drink that before they conceive. And here we have this epigenetic mechanism, and this particular one that affects the coats of an mammal, the coloration of their coats, and methyl is a factor in that, in DNA methylation, as we shall see. The ability of environmental factors to shape health and disease involves epigenetic mechanisms that mediate gene-environment interactions. Epigenetic gene regulation comprises the heritable changes in gene expression that occur in the absence of changes to the DNA sequence itself. Epigenetic mechanisms include chromatin folding and attachment to the nuclear matrix, packaging of DNA around nucleosomes, covalent modifications of histone tails, for example, acetylation, methylation, and phosphorylation, and DNA methylation, The influence of regulatory small RNAs and microRNAs on gene transcription is also increasingly recognized as a key mechanism of epigenetic gene regulation. Then in a subsequent paragraph, I think two paragraphs later, if I remember properly, the viable yellow agouti mouse model, in which coat color variation is correlated to epigenetic marks established early in development, has been used to investigate the impacts of nutritional and environmental influences on the fetal epigenome. The wild-type murine agouti gene encodes a paracrine signaling molecule that produces either black eumelanin or yellow phenylalanine, both capital A and small a transcriptions, are initiated from a developmentally regulated hair cycle specific promoter in exon 2. I should have read this more carefully. The eumelanin is a small a, and the yellow phenylmelanin or phenylmelanin is a capital A. So both phenylmelanin and eumelanin transcriptions are initiated from a developmentally regulated hair cycle specific promoter in exon 2, which is one of the genes, I guess, with its agouti gene or whatever actually resides or is found. Transient A expression in hair follicles. Transient A, transient phenylmelanin expression in hair follicles during a specific stage of hair growth results in a subapical yellow band on each black hair shaft, causing the brown agouti coat color of wild type mice. And even further on in the study, we read, maternal dietary supplementation with genistein, the major isoflavone present in soy, shifted the coat color distribution of, and I'll say certain because it's a symbol which represents a certain group of these experimental subjects, shifted the coat color distribution of this certain group of offspring toward pseudo-agouti, which is brown. This marked phenotypic change was mediated by increased DNA methylation of six genetic sites within this gene family, or this section of the DNA. I can't interpret all of these abbreviations on the fly, but they are all in the source article. The extent of DNA methylation in tissues from the three germ layers, brain, kidney, and liver, was correlated, indicating that genistein's influence on DNA methylation occurs during early embryonic development. So my point is that this DNA methylation process in these genes that can control the genetic expression of certain genes during early embryonic development. So therefore, here it should be fully evident that all of the necessary ingredients and reproductive circumstances needed in order to affect the genetic expression in the coats of Laban's cattle may be found in Jacob's trees. And while we cannot reproduce the phenomenon in an experiment of our own, it must have been for good reason that Jacob had employed these particular types of trees. As for the trees themselves, which are identified in the King James Version as the green, poplar, hazel, and chestnut trees, The word for green is lock, which is fresh or new. And that supports our earlier assertions that the rods which Jacob used would have been better translated as shoots or even saplings. Here we would assert that the adjective applies to each of these varieties of trees. The word for poplar is libnah, which is related to the Hebrew word laban, which means white. The original Strong's Concordance defines it only as some sort of whitish tree, perhaps the storax. Jesenius shares the uncertainty of the identification of this tree as it was defined by Strong, but notes that in some places the Septuagint translated the word as the styrax. The spelling, for some reason, is slightly different than that used by Strong, and in others as the white poplar, as the Latin Vulgate translated the term here in this passage. The word for hazel, or luz, which is apparently an almond tree, and the word for chestnut, or armon, is defined as the plane tree, or Platanus orientalis, a tree which is also called Old World sycamore, or Oriental plane. Evidently, when a ewe or she-goat lowers her head to take a drink, she gets a little more than that, where we now read in verse 39, Genesis chapter 30. And the flocks conceived before the rods, or better, before the saplings, and brought forth cattle, ring-straked, speckled, and spotted. The Hebrew word for ring-straked is akad, which is striped or banded. The word for speckled is nakad, which almost seems to be related. I kind of think they are. Strong defines it as to mark by puncturing or branding, spotted. Evidently because a nakoda is a point or a stud, according to Jesenius, he defines nakad as marked with little points or little spots. The word for which the King James Version has spotted is tala, which Strong's original concordance defines as properly to cover with pieces. That is, by implication, to spot or variegate as tapestry. And using different words and examples, Jesenius agrees with that. Finally, another adjective, which does not appear until this event is recounted in chapter 31, is grizzled, from the Hebrew word barad. This word Strong defines as spotted, as if with hail, since an identically spelled word means hail. While Jesenius made the same connection to hail, which is obvious, he primarily defined the term as sprinkled with spots, and that nakad, which is also spotted, denotes lesser spots. Whatever that means, it is probably difficult to write into a dictionary definition without illustrations. Verse 40, Genesis chapter 30. And Jacob did separate the lambs, and set the faces of the flocks toward the ring straight, and all the brown in the flock of Laban. And he put his own flocks by themselves, and put them not unto Laban's cattle. And the word translated as brown in this verse is chum, which Strong's defines as being from an unused root meaning to be warm. That is, by implication, sunburnt or swarthy. And then he has in parentheses, blackish. Jansenius defines the word simply as black, listing the unused root under the same spelling and defining it to mean to be black, properly burned or scorched. Evidently, this was also seen as being defective in the sense of being in the same category as the cattle which were speckled and spotted. So to be black, of course, is to be defective. It is not entirely clear what is being conveyed here in this verse. The New American Standard Bible has the verse to read, "And Jacob separated the lambs, and made the flocks face toward the striped, and all the black in the flock of Laban. And he put his own herds apart, and did not put them with the Laban's cattle." That does not seem to make sense either. Although it does not entirely correlate with the Hebrew, Brenton Septuagint, which is faithful to the Greek here, has the verse to read, "And Jacob separated the lambs, and set before the sheep a speckled ram, and every variegated one among the lambs. And he separated flocks for himself alone, and did not mingle them with the sheep of Laban." Verse 41. "And it came to pass, whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods, or saplings, before the eyes of the cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the cattle were feeble, he put them not in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's." So the saplings are soaking in the water, and the sheep and the goats are both drinking the water and very likely also eating the saplings, which they do, and taking in all this methyl from three different types of trees. Might even be three different types of methyl. It would be interesting to own a ranch and be able to have those same types of trees and repeat this in different pens as some sort of experiment. That would be cool to be able to do that. Even if it failed, it would be pretty neat. Something tells me it won't fail. Here, the last clause of verse 42 in the Septuagint, where it says, "So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's," in the King James Version. In the Septuagint, it reads, "But the unmarked ones were Laban's and the marked ones Jacob's." The word translated as feebler, which Strong's defines as a primitive root, to shroud or clothe, hence from the idea of darkness, to languish. The word translated as stronger is from the Hebrew word kashar, and it's defined by Strong's as a primitive root to tie, or physically to gird, confine, compact, or mentally to be in love or in league, to be tied to someone. So stronger makes no sense. Okay, Brenton has this fairly correct. The unmarked ones were Laban's, and the marked ones were Jacob's. So, the Greek has the words asemos and episemos, rather than these meanings of languished, which the King James Version translated as feebler, and tied or bound to something, which the King James Version has as stronger. And that really doesn't make much sense to me at all, even from looking at the Hebrew, the way the King James Version has this. And it's marked and unmarked in the Septuagint. So I can't possibly account for those differences in this passage. I don't really think it's that important, but the Septuagint certainly seems to be a lot more accurate than the Hebrew, because the marked ones were Jacob's, the marked animals, the animals with stripes and spots and streaks, and the unmarked ones were Laban's. So I can't account for that difference in the Masoretic text at all. Once again, it seems that the sap from the young shoots would enter the water in the gutters, and that the cattle would also eat of the shoots themselves. By that means, as we have already explained at length in the citations which we have provided here, it is apparent that the resulting nutritional factors were the cause of the activation of latent genes which caused the cattle to be variegated in the coloring of their coats. Then, although this is only conjecture, we must wonder whether the three different trees were responsible for producing the different outcomes: spotted, speckled, ring-streaked, and grizzled. The final verse of the chapter informs us of the ultimate result of Jacob's labors in the house of Laban. And the man increased exceedingly, and had much cattle, and maidservants, and menservants, and camels, and asses. And we are not informed as to how Jacob had attained servants beyond the handmaids which were given by Laban to each of his wives, nor are we informed as to how he had acquired camels and asses. It may only be conjectured that while he worked for Laban, he also had time to engage in at least some industry for his own personal profit. Perhaps it was trading his spotted cattle for horses or camels, or for camels and asses. Here it seems that Jacob was dishonest, but Laban had agreed to the arrangement. And just as Jacob agreed to work 7 years, and Laban had deceived him by substituting Leah for Rachel, whereby he held Jacob hostage for another 7 years, now Laban has been recompensed by his own devices. Then, as we shall learn in chapter 31, it was Yahweh who had informed Jacob of what to do, and therefore Yahweh himself had justified and avenged Jacob, while having punished Laban for his deceit. But the first to complain of what was done are Laban's sons, who were not mentioned at all until Laban had entrusted them with the speckled and spotted among his original flock. And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's, he had gotten all this glory." Of course, they would stand to inherit whatever Jacob would not have taken away. And Jacob's devices here must have greatly diminished the flock of Laban. The sons must have said this in the form of a report to their father. Because we next read, "And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before." He couldn't use him anymore. Here Laban the exploiter must have realized that he was exploited in turn, and that Jacob had gotten the better of him in his own game. As we had explained, there could not have been much time left in Jacob's 20-year stay with Laban for him to have accomplished this, perhaps 2 years at the most. An article at Scotland's Farm Advisory Service advises us that lambing 3 times in 2 years is possible with some breeds of sheep, for example, Dorset, Merino, etc., rather than the normal system of 1 lambing per year. Generally, sheep are seasonal breeders, with the dark autumn and winter nights triggering the start of the breeding season. And corresponding to this, although we did not document it with a citation, many of the sources which informed us that sheep and goats eat tree bark and even the wood had also stated that such activity is especially prevalent in the fall and winter months, which are evidently the same months in which such animals are most likely to breed. Verse 3, Genesis chapter 31. And Yahweh said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. So Jacob immediately informs his wives of the division, and will find them to be in agreement with him, as it is proper their wives should be. Women also must be subject to the commandment which was given to Adam, where he was told in Genesis chapter 2, that therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. It does not say cleave unto his wife and her parents, but only cleave unto his wife. And Jacob sent, and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before. But the God of my father has been with me, and ye know that with all my power I have served your father. Notice that the handmaids were not called, even if they may have accompanied Leah and Rachel. Just as it was with Hagar and her relationship with Sarah, Zilpah and Bilhah would not have had the same status in the household as Jacob's wives, and they would only expect to do what they were told to do, so they had no choice in any matter of decision and no expectation to even be informed, since essentially they were still slaves, as Hagar was. So Jacob continues his address. And your father has deceived me, and changed my wages 10 times. But God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ringstraked shall be thy hire, then all the cattle bear ringstraked. So even though this could only have happened over the course of a couple of years, unless the process began much earlier than the account of Moses actually reflects, which is another possibility, we once again see the extremely concise manner in which these accounts were written, since much of Jacob's conversation here reflects things which were not described when the account was first related in chapter 30. Where the King James Version has changed my wages 10 times. The Septuagint in Brenton's English has, and changed my wages for the 10 lambs, which seems to be nonsense. That's nonsense. The text of verse 8 supports the reading translated from the Masoretic text. In verse 8, the Septuagint has white rather than ringstraked, which also cannot readily be explained. Jacob could not have understood epigenetics or the effects of nutrition on genetic expression, but rather he only understood what instructions Yahweh had given to him earlier in the dream, which is mentioned here, and his actions, as they are described, with the shoots of young trees placed in the troughs, must have resulted from what he saw in that dream. So he can only make an attestation of its results. Thus God has taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived, that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ringstraked, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spoke unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here I am. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes and see. All the rams which leap upon the cattle are ringstraked, speckled, and grizzled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. So, as we have asserted, this was not a magic trick, nor was it a miracle, except that before any understanding of genetics and the effects of nutrition on human cells, men could only have perceived it in that manner. And therefore, many critics have scoffed at this account in their ignorance. In recent decades, some denominational churches have noticed some of the things which we have discussed here. So I have not been the first to notice these things. But we can understand that Jacob's experience here is a result of natural phenomena. Yahweh God, being the author of nature, knows how his creation was designed. And this is just one more event in Scripture, which our modern knowledge vindicates, even if what men call science is abused in many other aspects. Now Jacob concludes by once again informing his wives that they must separate from their father's house, where he is still repeating what Yahweh had spoken to him in the dream. I am the God of Bethel, wherein thou anointed the pillar, and wherein thou vowed a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return to the land of thy kindred. The word for kindred here, moledeth, is the same word which was used on several occasions in Genesis chapter 24 to describe the relationship between Abraham and the house of Bethuel, the father of Laban. So here it is used in an even narrower and more immediate sense. Now where Leah and Rachel answer Jacob, it is evident that they are concerned for their own futures above that of their fathers and brothers. And they express ambivalence towards their father for the manner in which he had married them to Jacob. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, is there any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he has sold us, and has quite devoured also our money. The word for strangers here in verse 15 is a feminine plural of nakri, while it is often interpreted as stranger or alien. And it may describe such. It is also used of someone of one's own tribe or race who is simply not recognized. In the same manner Job had lamented in the time of his calamity, that they that dwell in mine house, my maids, count me for a stranger. I am an alien in their sight, in Job chapter 19. In Psalm 69, David cried, that I am become a stranger unto my brethren, and an alien unto my mother's children. All of these passages use this term, nakri. Ruth had also called herself a stranger in that sense, in relation to Boaz, using that same word in Ruth chapter 2. Rachel and Leah, Job, David, and Ruth were not complaining that they were somehow of some other race. They were only lamenting that they were estranged from their own families or households. A nakri is some outsider, someone who is unknown to the beholder. And the term does not designate race or refer to any particular or necessarily different race. There's a lot of confusion over all of the Hebrew words for stranger, which must be rectified. Now Leah and Rachel express a sense of entitlement in relation to what Jacob had done, as they evidently felt shortchanged by their own father, who would have kept them and their children poor, while he kept their husband as his serf, and he left his wealth to their brothers. For all the riches which God has taken from our father, That is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God has said unto thee, do. Therefore they are fully agreeable to their departure with him. Then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels. And he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting which he had gotten in Paddan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. This ends the relationship of mutual exploitation between Laban and Jacob. But Jacob had only moved to exploit Laban when Yahweh told him how it was that he should be avenged. Once again, Jacob accepted his burdens and left his plight in the hands of Yahweh his God, who rewarded him in the end. Now, Jacob shall face several challenges along the long journey home. The first being the pursuit of Laban, and one final and unexpected confrontation with his father-in-law. During that confrontation, Jacob would finally inform Laban of his grievances and how Yahweh his God had ensured that he would leave with his wealth, which also serves as a condemnation of the greed of Laban. Thank you for listening. Yahweh willing, we will be back next year with the next portion of our Genesis commentary. Next Friday evening, I pray. Sunday, we have an open forum at 10 a.m. Eastern, U.S. Eastern Time, which is 3 p.m. Greenwich Meridian Time, London Time. Praise Yahweh, the God of Israel. And good night.